And I think all colored people listening to this, you'd probably attest to this as well, that colored people always tell you that if you were to ask, let's say, mind your business, that's grown folk business. So in other words, it's a that's what means it's a hutto. So the boys are back in town, the international boys at that. As you see, you know, we are onwards and upwards, man, both in life and with the pod. Those of you who have joined us for the first time, this is The Big Vibe with Tim and Ty, your weekly place for all things interesting. Today we speaking about something that could be considered to be taboo in some instances. And, you know, where there is a conversation, you're going to find us. So,
having it.
Tim and Ty today are going to be addressing the topic of sex.
Yes, sir.
It's all around. I think it's very accessible in this modern time that we find ourselves in. And it's actually gotten to a point where it could be something dangerous to some. It's overbearing to others. It's a form of expression to some. There's a lot to talk about here, and I want to kick the conversation off by just starting about attitude towards sex. So in the world that we live in, there's likely a narrative that it's become a lot less conservative, with it being so readily available on multiple platforms. You take social media, for example, as well as the multitude of websites that are out there. Would you agree with this statement that it has become a lot less conservative, and how do you feel about it overall?
I'm not so sure if I guess you could say, yeah, the world has probably become a lot less conservative, but I also just think that there's a lot more content and information and just stuff out there. And I think we have more information at our fingertips now than we ever did. And things are easier to reach now than they ever were. But yes, I think I would say that things are probably a little bit more conservative than in the past. I also think that's got to do with, I think the world in general is probably, and I don't have a fact to back this, so maybe we should just check. But I would guess that the world is probably less religious than it has been over a long period of time. I just mean in terms of straight up traditional followings of your more conservative religions, and I think that's probably playing a part as well. And also our not perception, but our interpretation of religion is probably a lot more open-minded than it ever has been. And I know sex and religion are not the only two things that are connected, but I think that also plays quite a big part. I mean, I don't know, how do you feel? Do you feel like it's less conservative than like when we were growing up?
I think a lot less conservative. I think with the times that we're in now, accessibility is one major aspect that contributes towards that. I think to your point, there is a lot of, not just denominations of what was traditional religious followings, but now you have a lot more, let's call it, representation of the spiritual community. So I'm not necessarily just talking about traditional faith, but we see a lot more. And I think it's very evident in our generations and in a lot of our, call it, communities. We have people that are led by horoscopes. They are led by not necessarily faith-based.
I mean, I suppose it still is kind of faith-based, but it's I guess it's got less of a doctorate, I suppose. Not a doctorate, but less of a I don't want to say a book, but less of like less of a church-based following, or like a led by necessarily like a priest in a book. It's a lot less conventional, like, so to speak, you know. It's not the same kind of, because the faith is just in a different, you know, maybe like, it's like a more spiritual faith in sense of like, maybe like faith in like the universe, or faith in like, you know, energies or something like that. But it's a, yeah. It's less following the teachings or ideals that are found in like a manuscript, if that makes sense.
Agreed. Yeah, I think you've posed that quite well. And that's actually a curious point. So in your upbringing, and I guess as a Caucasian individual, how would you describe the upbringing and how sex relates or sex's relationship with your upbringing?
So I don't know if it necessarily got to do with race, right? Because you always, yeah, like, or yep. You see like these crazy, like white parents that do, you know, like, you know, you hear things like only a white mom or dad is going to smoke weed with their child. Do you know what I'm saying? Like you only, brilliant. You see some things, and I didn't have that kind of stuff growing up, right? But I'll say that my parents were like ultra conservative in terms of their conversations with me. In fact, I've mentioned before that I don't have many memories growing up, but my high school career, I remember quite a lot, and I can pretty confidently say that neither my mom nor my dad, took the time out to actually sit and have like, maybe not the birds and the bees conversation, but they didn't really have any of these kinds of conversations with me. My dad and my mom were both quite religious. I wasn't really brought up quite religiously, but it was very much like the lessons that I learned would have happened at church, kind of thing, and that's its own kind of lessons. But in terms of like my upbringing and actually just kind of talking about it and maybe even just feeling safe talking about it, I didn't really have that personally. And we'll talk about it at school in a moment. But yeah, I think for me, I had like a very, very, very ultra conservative, like, we don't talk about that kind of thing. But I'll also say, like, I wasn't like asking, it's not like I was seeking this from them and they weren't giving it to me. I wasn't really asking either. So, you know, like, I'm not mom and dad, if you are listening, I'm not trying to blame them, because it's not like I was asking questions and they were just neglecting me. It didn't really happen. How about you? Like, And when you answer, is yours like is it typical of like what a colored household would be, or from your understanding at least?
And I think all colored people listening to this, you'd probably attest to this as well, that colored people always tell you that if you were to ask, let's say, mind your business, that's grown folk business. So in other words, it's a that's what means it's a putter. So when you're older, you'll know about it. For now, focus on being a kid. Go out, play, etc. Follow DBZ, you know, enjoy your life. And all that relates to what you're busy with at the moment. So grown folks business was, when you're old enough, you'll hear about it and you'll come to understand it. Also, generally, a lot of colored households are very closely aligned with religion.
Okay.
So we are big Christians. This is top down. So your grandparents, your parents, all your cousins, you know, Sundays for church, you already get a lot of encouragement to spend time with the Bible, to go into Sunday school as well as youth. So when you're a little older, you then go to youth clubs and youth groups. And I did find that, as you'd expect, there isn't a lot of conversation around sex.
Yeah.
I think in the youth groups, we got some discussions around it, more so for a perspective. So I think with the churches that I attended, you'd obviously not promote sex at a young age. However, for those who have had sex, it's not to say that you're disbanded from ever attending this fellowship, you're not allowed in this community again. It's almost an acknowledgement of what you've done, the repercussions of it, from a faith point of view, but also from a personal point of view. If you're a 16-year-old person that's expecting to have a child, there are consequences to that.
Yes. Okay.
In your physical and your immediate world, do you have acknowledgement for the resources that you need at hand to raise this child? Who are you going to rely on to help you out when raising this child, you know? So it's the understanding there. I think in school, like you had mentioned, there was very few and far between having
just
conversations
before,
about this. I can't. Yeah.
Before we go into school, I just want to ask you quickly. I know some of the, like, especially more, I don't want to say staunch, but like I guess staunch Catholic believers don't believe in contraception. You know, I know there's actually quite a lot of religions that don't believe that sex is more about reproduction than, you know, like about pleasure. But what was like your, from your religious experience, did you have anything in that regard that was like, I mean, I'm not just talking about saving it for marriage, right? Because I know that's like quite a staple, fundamental belief. But I just mean like in terms of like, like contraception in general, was it taught like, you know, don't use?
So abstinence is better than cure. I guess that would be the resting statement to begin with. And there is pleasure in sex. However, it then comes back to grown folk business. When you're found someone that you're going to spend essentially eternity with or the rest of your life with, you found a partner, someone that you are head over heels for, someone that you are going to invest all your time, your energy, your efforts in building a relationship with, yes, this is the person that you should have sex with. And there's no need for contraception then in that case, because either you'd likely procreate, so you're likely going to be wanting to have a child. But yeah, I guess more often than not, that was the conversation. So is that there's no need for the contraception. But I mean, in being wise and safe, having contraception and having that be the conversation with you and your soul partner, or the partner that you are likely to, I guess, progress in life with. So it was never a conversation that you should only be protected or have contraception for every sexual exploit that you're doing.
But
it
wasn't
all centered
like,
around having one person.
It wasn't discouraged from like using a like let's say now, okay, older now, you got married and stuff. It's not like you don't feel like you are breaking any religious code if you do decide to use contraception, do you? Do you feel like that at all? You don't?
I think, yeah. So, again, it all just revolves around your practice with your partner.
Yeah.
Partner being singular and not plural.
Yes,
and,
of course.
I mean, your life planning. So,
yeah.
Obviously, when you have
well, I mean, that
the consideration
actually
for kids, that's
that, yeah, that makes sense. But that actually makes me think, like, okay, so when I think now back to school, right? And now, so I've been teaching now for 5 years. Other than at the moment when I'm on like a dope 6-month sabbatical, which is actually not going as well. I got pretty sick, but like, so like I'm not teaching at the moment, but I've been teaching for a long time. So I taught at a private school in South Africa. Then I taught at a kind of semi-government school in Thailand. And then I taught at a very international, like American school in Bangkok. But that one was founded on Seventh-day Adventist, like principles, but it doesn't necessarily follow a religious curriculum. So it's not like actually directly affiliated to the church in any way. And what I found is that even now as a teacher, and I'm older in this, where we're talking about how like, ooh, sex is everywhere. I'm like, but I haven't seen it enough in schools, right? So I haven't seen like, when I spoke to like the health teacher and stuff like that, I was like, do you do like sex education? And he's like, yeah, we do it. And I looked at like what they taught and it looked like what we did at school. And I remember what I did in school was like in grade seven was the first time. Yeah, grade seven probably was the first time we were separated into boys and girls. I think it was for like 5 days, for an hour a day at the end of the day, where we were separated into these classes and we were taught about sex, but purely from a biological point of view, like anatomy. This is how you would use a condom. And that was, I do remember having consent conversations, and in high school, I do remember having consent conversations as well, I'll admit. But I still feel as if, like, you know, that there's that not nearly enough sex education was going on. Now you have, like, I don't know, you and me, for example, who either it's grown men to sahudus, or for me, I just, like, that no one's asking, I'm not asking, and no one's telling, and then I'm at school and I'm learning about it biologically, but everything else, like emotionally and stuff, I was never taught about this stuff, you know. And there's been times where I'm a stunted adult now because I don't have this information, right? And I can get it, yes, I can Google it, I can email it, but you sometimes feel embarrassed, like I'm a 30-year-old male, I have to Google these things that sometimes I feel should have been taught to me. Like, I just feel like it should have been taught. But at the same time, I do also have a feeling that we were maybe a little bit immature, and maybe there was this emotional chat that was trying to be had when I was 13 years old, but I was a 13-year-old giggling at the condom being put on the cucumber in front of the class, or you know what yeah. I'm saying, or I don't know. But what do you remember sex education being?
Very similar to that. I do remember, I think it was probably grade 7, the conversation about sex being from an anatomic point of view. So speaking about the various sexual organs, how to put on a condom on a cucumber. We also had that demonstration. I think the girls, from what I heard, so account from what happened in high school, I think this was still earlier, like almost like grade 9, younger. Main grade 10-ish.
Yeah.
And then I know we were also separate, and I heard that the girls had to, they watched the film and they came back a bit scarred because they spoke about all the STDs and things like that. So they were talking about what you can get, like for chlamydia, et cetera, et cetera. So they were quite scarred. And I think a lot of sex education is, I guess, to back the statement, prevention is better than cure. So in trying to really, push people away from early sexual engagement, I guess, well, the follow-up question to what you've spoken about is, at what age do you think would, I guess, now that you have the retrospect as a 30-year-old man, as well as being a facilitator, at what age are kids best primed to have a conversation like this? Because the shocking statement and, I guess, fact that I had come across with sex education and how early kids are really having sex is that kids are already, on average, having sex at the age of around 12, 13, 12. 18. And when I think back to my schooling career, I'm like,
yeah, that's
was the furthest. That was the furthest thought from my mind at that stage. Like,
yeah,
how are you doing having relations? And it's something that I think you only understand once you're an active participant. So I understand why there is such a big conversation around sex, and why there's a lot of, I guess, pressure or there's a lot of weight put on it, because it's not just a physical experience. I think from my personal experience, it's almost like a spiritual experience as well. It's emotional, it's physical. There's so many layers to it that you couldn't possibly learn to comprehend or even understand at such a young age.
Yeah. And I know if there's like
you'd agree with them.
Yeah, I do agree. And there's definitely a stigma surrounding sex education. And a lot of people actually say things like, you know, why are you teaching a 12-year-old? You know, why are you doing sex education with a 12-year-old if they're not supposed to be having sex? And then it's kind of like, well, but they are. Like, whether they're supposed to or they're not supposed to, they are doing it. So it's very difficult to then be like, yeah, but if you teach them, you make it worse. I'm kind of like, well, rather give them the knowledge and the information. If they're going to do it, you rather want them to have at least as much information and stuff as they can. Not now, I'm not saying to enable it and to start building bunk beds in schools and stuff for this to happen. But at the same time, if you know it's happening, I'm not, again, not don't allow it at the school necessarily or anything, but equip them with the knowledge that they need to ensure that at least if they're going to be doing it, they're going to be doing it safely, right? And I think that's been, for the longest time, there was like, I've never really believed that like prevention is like the best lesson to teach. But that's just my view, and I'm not saying that any other view is incorrect, or that you know, teaching prevention is the wrong thing. I'm not, just for me, I know, like, I'm not aiming when I have kids one day, I don't think I'll teach them prevention when they start reaching like the age of like, you know, 15, 16, when they really, or I believe you actually really start getting curious about it. Maybe even you start having questions, like when you start hitting puberty, obviously, because your body's changing. But like 15, 16, I remember is like when I really started like having questions and like, you know, going to my mates and talking to them about it. So like, I think like at that stage, it's like, for me, that would kind of be the age where, I think before that, I would give like, again, some biological and some emotional information about it. And then I think like in high school, but the thing is, it can't really be, it needs to be redone. Like, I actually really like the show Sex Education. I don't know if you've watched it, but it's quite good. I think it's a really cool, you know, as much as we're talking about how like there's, you know, this globalization of information and how, you know, that's kind of conquered everything and shared all this information about it. At the same time, it's also given like a lot of like education, like even me watching Sex Education, I was like, whoa, I don't know that. Like, you know, there's lots of things out there now that are like, you know, and are also made in a way that's not scarring, you know, like the video that they made our poor female colleagues at school watch, which again is kind of weird that only the females, you know, that's a whole nother discussion to have, which I don't think you and I are quite privy to giving too much insight into. But you know, like, there's at least now there's relatable and accessible information, as well as what can be considered overwhelming, if you know what I mean. So like, it's nice to watch a show like Sex Education where you can feel a bit shy or whatever while you're watching it, but at the same time, you are actually learning about it, and you can do it while having a bit of a laugh, or like having all these different relatable characters, you know, people of different sexual orientations, you know, people, you know, that are like asexual, things that we've never even heard of, but that definitely exist, you know. But it actually led me to wanting to ask you about, like, I wanted to ask you about OnlyFans, right? So for people that don't know, OnlyFans is like a kind of self-run adult content site where you, don't worry, the Big Vibes not setting up the OnlyFans account just yet, but where you can go, you set up an account. I think it initially didn't actually start to be about adult content. I think it started to be just more exclusive content where, for example, if the Big Vibe started an OnlyFans account, we could release an extra weekly episode, for example. But it became a lot more like adult content based. And I wanted to ask you what's your opinion like on OnlyFans? And I know you said that you came across like a really cool video or article or something that you heard about it.
Yeah, I think it's always going to spark debate, because I think it's, you, more often it's one of two sides. It's the pro. So the pro side, it's giving a majority of the content creators are women. I think there was a stat out there that it's about 80%, 90% women.
Yeah, I think I saw 10%
men.
Something like that.
So the fact that you're giving them the liberation to, I guess, take back their sexuality and own it. And then the con side, or the flip side of that coin, is that does this play into the objectifying of women? Because essentially, and maybe this is a bit wild of a thought, but it's almost like commodifying women. So you can pay for the for women as an object, or as a product. So that's obviously the con. And the video that you mentioned is the interview that I saw, I think her name is Al Brook, have with Piers Morgan. And he had it's about a 10-15 minute conversation with her, and she's quite a renowned star on the platform, and she's used that basis to spring off into other ventures. So she's now into celebrity boxing a result of the fame that she's managed to create from the OnlyFans platform. It's given her the ability to become a celebrity, to become a household name, so to speak. And he had another expert in the US, and essentially the question, or the line of questioning, was, for you as a creator, what did this mean? You were someone that was studying to become a law practitioner, and you had dropped out to pursue a career in OnlyFans. Why is that? You're smart, you've got everything going for yourself, you didn't need to do this. Her rebuttal was that she's good at it. It's something that I can do. I'm really good at it. I clearly have the exposure that I want. I get to become a celebrity. And on top of all of that, I get paid. I get paid stacks. She said she's one of the top creators. So like 0.0 whatever percentage of the creators. And you get paid by the platform. You get paid, obviously, by your big hull of subscribers.
Yeah.
And it's made her a millionaire or thereabouts. However, the conversation was also led to what happens when she has kids one day and what this looks like for them growing up, for them going to school and having her mother posted across social media, easily accessed. What kind of conversations does this need to drive with her and her kids? And she said, well, at least they'll be able to cry in a Ferrari. You know, it will be so well off that all of this
no worries.
Exactly. And the interesting bit was that the guest in the States, who is a relationship expert or something or the other, was saying that as much as this is a platform for female liberation, it's giving people the power to essentially empower themselves and get to put out how their boldness for their sexuality and their content, it also creates a false narrative for the younger generation. So there's lots of 16-year-olds who apply to the platform thinking that it's quick money, that everyone is in it. Everyone is able to make millions from the get-go. You'd suddenly put out a few clips, some content. Next thing you know, in a month's time, you're earning 12 grand. But she said, on average, in the first 3 months of startup, you're likely to get paid, I think it's $60 a month from your content. So she said, the equivalent, you could go work at McDonald's and earn much more than these people that assume you just make big bucks a month.
Yeah.
So I find it very, very curious. And yourself, the advent of OnlyFans.
I also think, you know, there is something like respectful about like controlling the content, because we know like the I don't necessarily think that OnlyFans is necessarily pornography, so to speak. I think it can be in some cases. I don't think it is exclusively pornography. But if you want to talk about it in just in terms of adult content, which, you know, groot mense se dinge, it is that. It's, you know, so... But it does give, like, instead of, like, the pornography industry has always been, like, littered with, like, trafficking and rape and all these, like, really, really, like, truly atrocious crimes have always gone almost hand in hand with pornography. And, you know, so there's something really cool about, like, okay, you do get to actually control your own content. You control your own... kind of schedule. I know you can, like, in some cases I've heard, like, you can, like, request things. So you can, like, you can say, I'll pay $50 for something. Like, let's say you have a fetish, like, I don't know, wear a pink hat or something, and you can do that, but you don't have to accept that. So you're pretty much in control of the things that you feel comfortable doing, and I do think that there's something cool about that. At the same time, I do sometimes think, like, and I also watched a video about this the other day where this guy, he was ranting though, and I think he didn't get the message across very, very well. But what I gathered from what he was trying to say was basically like, okay, but we're also kind of normalizing it a lot more because it's becoming a lot more accessible for just an average person, like an average young girl, to just go and create this kind of content where it should never have crossed her mind to want to create that content, but now she just can. You know, I don't know if you've watched Euphoria, but I just recently watched it. It's very hectic, very cool show, but very hectic. And there's a character in that show that starts like a webcam kind of thing. And also, like, it kind of starts from like a self-confidence kind of thing, like a low self-confidence thing. And she uses this to like kind of build her self-confidence up. So, you know, again, I kind of want to be wary about like just being like too, like 30-year-old men, like just sitting here and being like, oh yeah, women shouldn't do X, Y, and Z, you know. But what I can say is, like, also the thing is, like, what are we also teaching like young boys and young men, that like it's so easy to kind of like just access, you know, something that I think, you know, like sexualization and like, you know, and I know sexualization is both men and women, but unfortunately when you talk about it, it is more based more when it comes to like a woman's sexual prowess, is like more of like a mystique and a beauty thing that they are in control of, and that they kind of have as like this wonderful, almost magical power kind of thing. And that kind of like that essence, for me, I at least believe that like a little bit of magic is kind of like lost when it's like, you know, you slap a number on it, and it's just like, I think it becomes a lot of pressure for these young girls that start getting into this. Now, I'm not saying that there's no space for this kind of thing, you know, and I'm not saying I agree with this guy saying that OnlyFans is a bad thing, because I don't necessarily think it is necessarily a bad thing. I just thought it was very interesting to hear that perspective about how like it's been normalized and kind of almost integrated into like anyone can become like essentially like a softcore porn star. And you know, like I just think to myself, like, I'm a high school teacher, you know, and like I'd like, it's just like it would blow my mind if I had to think about any of like, you know, how easy it would be for any one of my students to just start an OnlyFans account, you know. And you hear like horror stories about like stepdads who have signed up to like their stepdaughter's OnlyFans account. Yeah, all these like trash news stories. And that's the only thing that really worries me, is like, okay, we providing these essentially good tools, but we're not providing like the training that's supposed to go with this kind of stuff, you know. Like, I think you should be trained and you should be showed like how to do these things properly and safely, and you know, like how to manage it properly, you know. And that actually leads me to like the final point that I wanted to talk to you about. In general, do you have an overall or an overarching opinion about sex workers?
I know, like, it's not something I can begin to understand, because I don't have enough knowledge. I don't know too many people that have enough, I guess, experience or even kind of just general conversation around it. I haven't been in those circles. I think I know it's very it's something that's always a pressing issue. I know that South Africa has had many a action towards trying to essentially legalize it. So I guess like in following a similar way that it's done in the Netherlands. So everyone, I think, has heard of the red light district at some point in their lives. And we know that there are women sex workers there who either perform shows or perform deeds or acts or services. Let's sum it up as services. For, I guess, specific clientele. And it's, I think, being in such a sex, I call it a sex positive nation, they generally have a lot more backing from a legal point of view. So these are the set of, this is a framework in which sex workers can operate in. This is the safe area in which they can practice their profession, lack of a better phrase. And that's something that I know a lot of nations have been trying to do to best promote safer and, I guess, better structured
Yeah.
I guess is the best way I can say it. Forced next work. So
I think,
I don't know. I think.
Yeah. So I think it's like one of those things you always hear that like prostitution is like the oldest profession. I think that's always so interesting. I think it's sort of like the my favorite quotes about prostitution. Like, oh, but you know, so the oldest profession. I'm like, yeah, people have been wanting this thing for like as long as we've been like eating. It's natural, right? It is natural. And I think like, yeah, like the need to legalize it, I think is becoming more and more prominent because like, you know, like these women and men, the men and women that do this need to be protected by the law because often they're not because, you know, like, it's like, what are you going to do? You're going to go to the cops, you know, like, you know, if like, let's say someone doesn't pay or something like that. But I think, you know, I actually think like sometimes we misunderstand. And I think this is also sometimes to do with the media and just general portrayal of stuff. I think sometimes I think like the magic or the spirituality of sex is often taken away in our minds more than it is in the moment. So like you get like this sometimes there's this portrayal in the media of like this hardcore thing that happens, and I'm like, you know, it's like I don't feel that way about it. Like sometimes it's just hectic, you know. And I think sometimes when it comes to sex workers, you get that side as well. And I think that's like many studies have been done about pornography, for example, about how that has mystified and actually destroyed a lot of like people's perception on what it's supposed to be, and it's actually created a lot of violence. And that kind of stuff, because that's what's portrayed is like this sense of dominance and whatever in the like pornographic world, when it's actually not in its truest form. I don't believe it's supposed to be like that, right? And I actually found an example of this like on BuzzFeed, where they went and they found some of the most unexpected stories of like something that a sex worker has been asked to do by a client. And this didn't actually involve having sex. I think these stories just kind of, I'll say what I think at the end. This is our wholesome moment, people, just so you know. So I'm just going to read three. I'm not going to read all of them. So the first one, my boyfriend used to be a sex worker. And once he had a woman who said she'd pay him to just lay his head across her lap and let her play with his hair for a few hours. He did so. And after he asked why, she said that her husband recently died in the hospital and they used to do that together. She didn't ask for anything more. And my boyfriend decided to let her keep the money. It's one of the few things he remembers fondly. I think him remembering him fondly shows you like that it's not always like that, but that it's just like that connection, you know? The second one, I used to be a sex cam worker and I had a regular client who always paid for private time with me. I didn't do anything sexual for him. He wanted me to dress up as a happy housewife and tell him that I was cooking tell him what I was cooking for dinner. He'd ask how the imaginary dogs and cats were doing, what their names were, and told me we lived in Italy. He'd pretty much play fantasy house with me. I would get really into it, and he would always visit me every day. And then the third one, I just found the third one quite funny. The person actually said, I can't find their original Reddit post, but someone hired a couple of sex workers to play Monopoly with him. And I think... You know, sometimes, and this is what I think sometimes at school that they missed as well, is that sometimes it's connection and closeness and, you know, like that kind of intimacy that I think even like sex workers, you know, provide for people, you know, at the end of the day. Like, it's not always like this hardcore hectic thing. And I actually do, sometimes I think I'm a bit of a humanitarian in this way. I actually sometimes do think that like this growing presence in like the media and stuff is actually a good thing for the world, because the more it comes out and the more it's like controlled by different people and the narrative is actually spoken by different people, the more we'll get a bigger understanding of it and the better it will become for the world as a whole. You know, like now they're making documentaries about how bad the pornography industry is. Before, it was so taboo to talk about. And I was like, okay, but let's dig into it and like let's actually like debunk this multi-trillion dollar industry. You know, it will take years and decades to undo. But I just think like, you know, when we actually get down to the root of it, much like in that wholesome like little story, I think it is actually just about that connection. And that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it a little bit today, and just like, you know, just also just voice our opinion on it a little.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting conversation. I think it's one that will be spoken about until the cows come home. Myself, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. There's, like I said, things that I don't understand. I don't think they're things that I'd ever understand. But there is a conversation there. There is opinions to be had, and we want your opinions. So, I mean, you know where to find us. We have our specific website. I'll have you know, very sleek, very sexy website. Sexy website that we have out there. It's the Big Vibe Podcast.
No, Big Vibe Podcast.
The Big...
Not the.
Big Vibe Podcast. Take away the. So... you again. Our website is bigvibepodcast.com. You can find our latest episode there. We're on social media. We're on Facebook. We are on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Our main ones, catch this on Spotify. Please remember that there is the poll question. So let us know which part of this episode you like the most, as well as answering the poll question that we have in there for you. And if you're looking to look at any of our previous episodes, please jump on to YouTube, Spotify. I will. Any last words, Ty?
No, that's it. I must say I really enjoyed that. And I do also want to say to the listeners, Tev and I have been talking. We both actually just want to get like more women on the podcast as well. We've got some ideas lined up. So if you are a lady and you'd like to come onto the podcast, just reach out to us. We'd love it. Anyone really, guys, girls, anyone, if you want to be on the pod, just let us know. We're happy to chat to anyone. And we enjoy doing that, but yeah, we really want to get some women on the podcast. I think it would be cool. We have some ideas of who we want to get involved, so keep an eye on that. But other than that, yeah, another great episode. And for me, that's it for, and I'll see you everybody next week.
That's it. See you then. Peace.